Good morning. This is Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine program from Gabriel Cancer Center. I'm Nash Gabriel. And as usual with me is Shelley Wrench. Shelley is the administrator of the Cancer Center. Shelley, again, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
We basically started this program 6 months ago. It's weekly, right? The idea was and still is public education about things that are complex. There's probably nothing more complex than medical economics and actually medical politics. Very complex, complicated, and in this day and age, I think people are hungry for tangible information. It's always been our mission at GCC, Gabriel Cancer Center, in addition to providing good care for patients, doing clinical research, internship from local universities and schools, but also public education, because we do believe that an informed patient is a good patient. And we also discovered in the last few years that an informed employer can be the best advocate to his employees when it comes to health and disease.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we pick and choose topics, usually, and spare for a moment, because we do believe that scripted talks and teleprompters are a barrier to an honest dialogue. I think most people do recognize that politicians who read from the teleprompters
are
not, hey, I tell you what, I breathe politics and medicine and golf, so I need to.
In that order?
No, it's medicine, golf, and politics. No. Makes it like a triangle. They're all equal.
It depends on the time of day.
Of course, you know,
and the weather.
Nothing matters more than and the weather. So I think the public do realize that politicians who read teleprompters are, I don't want to call them fake, but hey, I said it. People who say it as it comes. Remember the Gettysburg Address by Lincoln?
Right.
Although he had paper in his hand, he actually just iterated the whole thing, which became one of the best, one of the prominent short talks that changed the history of the human race.
Very true.
In fact, Jesus Christ, the Sermon on the Mount was the shortest, I think it was shorter than the Gettysburg Address. The Sermon on the Mount is when we said, love your enemy the way you love yourself. If somebody asks you for your coat, you give them your shirt. What is that? Something like that. That was the essence, and that changed the world, because it was the first time that a human being said something that was so profound, because you're supposed to hate your enemy. He said, no, love them. And that became the essence of Christianity. The point is, he said it, just stood there. I don't think he had scribes. I don't think he had a paper in his hand. I'm talking about Jesus Christ. Yes, of course, the believers will say, because he's the Lord. Of course, he doesn't need papers. But he said it from his heart, and it was very short. And that's why we believe in our program that no preparation. I call it mental diarrhea. What do you think?
Wow, what an opening.
Okay.
So, talking about love thy enemy.
Yes.
Today's topic, we want to talk about pre-authorizations, which could also be called by different payers, pre-authorizations, pre-certifications, pre-determinations. Each insurance company decides what they want to call it and have different things. Talking about love thy enemy, do I have to love thy payer? Because this is something that it's incredibly important. I know we've made different comments along the way with all of our, in some of our other episodes about, you know, access to care, but this is actually something that's extremely important to the whole healthcare world, because in 2015, there was a cost to getting pre-authorizations of $21 to $32 billion. Just they tried to
the cost of the process.
The cost of the process. And physicians in that same survey that was in health affairs, the average cost to a physician's practice was over $82,000 per year.
Oh, I can see that.
That's profound.
How many staffers do you have that only do pre-auth?
We have two full-time staffers, and that's for a solo doc. We have one that does medication pre-auth and one that does.
So, Shelley, let me make this bring it to the level of the audience. Historically, no, there's nothing but more interesting than history when it comes to explain things. Historically, until 1994-95, I, as a physician, decide to give a patient treatment. I give the treatment. I bill for it. I get paid. End of story.
Can we go back there?
you wish. Then I think payers, insurance companies started to realize that this open-ended string cannot survive. In fact, Medicare, the government, discovered back in the early 80s that the idea of hospitals admit patients and charge whatever they want and Medicare happily pays was becoming a trick because they realized that there was an overutilization. Listen, you mentioned that can you love your enemy? I don't see payers or insurance companies as an enemy. I see them as legitimate businesses who are critical to the healthcare system, who are doing things that are supposed to be a reaction to overutilization. Unfortunately, they are not doing them exactly the way I envision. So, 20 years later, in fact, since 95, 96, payers start saying, you just cannot give anything you want. We have to go by pre-authorization process, meaning we might refuse to pay for a drug, well, or for a service. The FDA, the way it works in America, unlike Europe, in America, when the FDA approves drug, pretty much Medicare, Medicaid, especially Medicare, and private insurance are mandated to cover.
Right. They go by package insert. So if it's on the package insert, then yes.
Absolutely. And they are supposed to pay, and the drug companies decide on the price of the drug. We talked about this before.
Right.
It's a kind of a challenging thing. In Europe, and there is a lot of, I can guess there is about 25-30% of Americans who think that Europeans are really brilliant compared to the Americans, that their business and their government system, I'm talking about the socialists and the communists in America. In Europe, the European Union agency that's equal to the FDA will approve a drug, but there the healthcare systems are all government-owned, and the healthcare system there said, we don't want to cover for it.
Right, yeah.
These are drugs that are very useful for patients.
Yeah, we talked about that in a prior episode.
Right.
We need to talk about like the pre-certification. In fact, it was the Affordable Care Act that said there needs to, because it was kind of all over the place. Payers were sometimes doing pre-auths, pre-deeds, pre-certs. It was kind of all over the place. So the Affordable Care Act said that we need to have these things in process, right? But they need to be standardized. That was part of the ACA. The AMA in 2011 actually wrote a white paper. It's almost 20 pages long, so you know what that means. If it takes 20 pages to explain how to standardize, it's probably very difficult to do so. And they came out and they said, you know, they have to have standardized forms, standardized methods, whether it's portal or fax machine. Most of the pre-authorizations still are fax, ouch, and phone. There's some that have portals, but all the portals are different, and all the different payers have different ways that they need the pre-authorization.
Shelley, you do know that I don't like the process of pre-authorization. You do know that I prefer that I should use my clinical judgment in treating the patients the way I want. I think what happened was two phenomena happened in the last 15, 20 years. Physicians became increasingly fiscally irresponsible. We give treatments regardless of the cost, although there might be an equivalent. Second, the healthcare cost has been skyrocketing. And when you look, actually, Shelley, when you do the pre-auth, it's mostly for chemo drugs, right?
Oh, no, it's for everything.
CAT scan, not office visits.
Okay, can I tell you what happened just a couple of days ago?
Yeah.
We had a patient that came in who is diabetic.
Right.
Has an insulin pump.
Yes.
The payer approved a specific pump.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So we went to get the test strips, and it needed pre-auth.
Really?
So when we tried to get the test strips pre-auth, they said, no, you can't use those test strips. The only test strips that you can authorize for that patient is a different brand.
Okay.
Well, that brand will not, it's not, you can't use those strips in that pump that they just pre-authed. So they authorized one pump with a different brand's test strips.
You're saying that the pre-auth people are usually not really professional or intelligent?
Well, this is, I get what they're doing. They have some kind of contract.
How often do you get pre-auth people that you can't even understand their English?
60% of the time.
Where are they?
I actually surveyed our staff, and they both came up with exactly 60%
of the time.
That you can't understand
the pre-auth person. Do you think that's, is it economics that they hire pre-auth companies? Usually they're overseas, Philippines, India, wherever,
well,
right?
Of course.
Do you think that is just economics? Or do you, if you believe in the conspiracy theory, right, that they intentionally bring such people to frustrate you and you give up and you say, okay.
Oh, absolutely. And I was going to say that. You took the words right out of my mouth.
I don't want to deal with this anymore.
Yes.
Do you think that's the one?
Oh, absolutely. Because it gets so frustrating when they can't even, you mentioned diarrhea earlier, they can't even pronounce it. They have no idea what anything is. And it's mind boggling. How is it that these people who know nothing about medicine are determining the fate of treatments for patients?
So, shall I going back to my initial point was the pre-authorization was a response to an exuberant rise in the cost of healthcare. And payers, they wanted to contain that growth in the healthcare cost. But we have issues with the way they're doing it. Let me give you an example. Payers, let's say United Healthcare, let's say AllCare, let's say whoever, they have data on people like me for the last 20 years. That data include how many patients I have treated, what diseases they have, how many visits they made to me, how much was the total cost, and going on and on and on. Point is, when you have big volume, you should be able to detect the bad apple from the good apples.
Right.
What they currently do, they treat everybody equal. Just like the basketball. Everybody gets a trophy. In this case, everybody gets a shot.
Exactly.
Right. It's the exact opposite. I think that's the problem we're facing, is that they're treating everybody equal instead of saying, hey, Dr. G, like to me, you are way too expensive. We'll drop you from the plan. Why don't they do that? To be honest with you, we have dealt with locally owned insurance companies. They have that data, but they shy away from, what do you call it? Not punishing, not, I think they should have the right. If consistently a hospital or a lab or a physician or any agency or any service sector agency in the healthcare system, if consistently they are overutilizing, I think it will be better for the payers to say, hey, listen, you are an outlier. Statistics work. They don't want to go there. I even have talked to Dr. Newcomer, Lee Newcomer. He is the medical director for United Healthcare. And actually, I yelled at him. I told him, you are totally irresponsible because you know who are the bad apples. He said, well, we cannot really discriminate. This is the problem we're facing with the pre-auth. So I get treated the same way. I think I'm cost conscious. I think I use generics when available. I think I don't think I give drugs unless needed. Yet I get treated the same way like a physician who is cost wise as much as I am, because they have to treat everybody equal.
Well, in one of our other episodes, there are different, when we talk about like how do you know who are bad apples and good apples, they're not using the right documentation to try to portray that. But it's funny the way that the ACA determined this whole process of coming together. They said that payers and providers, physicians, should partner and trust each other. My goodness.
What's ACA? Oh, that's Obamacare?
Yeah.
Well, here's the problem. The Obama administration and the Democrats generally are really living in a la-la land. They live in a parallel world. It was the same guys who designed the ACA when they said about the pre-existing.
Right.
When they say insurers cannot deny pre-existing. And there was a Republican senator. I was watching the hearings. The Republican senator, he challenged Mr. Senator Baucus. Baucus was the Democrat. And he said, wouldn't that make people like sit on their rear end without buying insurance? And when something bad happens, that they will go and buy insurance. He said, oh, you're thinking too mischievously of the American people. This is how their mentality is. They're in la-la land. Yeah, if you open that door, why would that? It's exactly like buying a house, if owning a house. Wouldn't it be nice that you don't buy insurance on the house, but if the house gets hit by lightning, then you go to the insurance, tell them, I want to buy, and there will be a law that you will provide me insurance and you'll cover that lightning. That's exactly the way it is. So when they say the payers and the, it doesn't work that way, that they have to work together. Now, we have, the payers have the duty to profile. Profile has become a bad word in America. Profile is good. Profile is a statistics. Profile is based on the bell curve. And there is enough physicians that when you profile and you identify the outliers, the 2.5%, get them out or pay them less or do something. Money, after all, is the biggest incentive for people to perform and improve.
It's funny that you bring up money, because part of the trust issue I have with the payers is when going through the pre-certification process, that they guide us into using a specific medication, and it's not always the cheapest, it's not always the best. You have to wonder about the money that they're getting and the politics behind it.
Yeah, and there you go. And Obamacare says there should be some trust between us, the physicians, and the insurance. When you know what you described, Shelley, is preferential treatment of some drugs by payers is because they have kickback.
Right. There was a perfect example.
What do you call the kickback? Rebate.
Yeah.
So they might prefer the more expensive a drug if they get a more juicy rebate. And, of course, that would make the cost more expensive. So they come to us and they start scrutinizing us, squeezing us, so that we minimize how much cost they have inflated with their policies. They are business, though. They are businesses. And I only blame the employers who actually trust the payers that much.
Well, there's a perfect example that we tried to run through our pharmacy. It was for constipation. And you had ordered one drug. And we tried to get the pre-certification. They said, no, you can't use that drug. You have to use another drug. Well, the drug that you prescribed is almost $35 less a month. It has a copay card that the patient pays zero.
Nice.
The drug they wanted, of course, was higher, and the patient had to pay $25 if they qualified for the copay assistance. So it didn't benefit.
Smells fishy, doesn't it?
Smells like a rotten fish.
Rotten fish.
You wonder. I mean, it all goes back to there's got to be those contractual issues in the background.
But Shelley, honestly, I agree with you. In business, in anything we do, we shouldn't blame people for doing the wrong thing. I'll give you an example. You are on the golf course, right? And generally speaking, golfers are very honest people, right? Honest to God people. Some of them still cheat, take the ball here and there. So the sandbaggers and so on. But generally, they're honest people. I mean, the best people you meet in the world are on the golf course and right. On the marinas. You go to this fourth tee, and you throw $100 bill there. Finish your game and come back. What percent of the time that $100 would be sitting there?
And what is the wind?
What's the wind? Okay, now let's say you put it there with the marble on top of it, right? Even when you go back to the clubhouse and say, you know, I lost $100. Is anybody? The point I'm making is, when you make things easy for people, not easy, which way should I put it? Basically, when you invite people to take advantage of you, they are not to be blamed. You are. So employers, when they know about these tactics that the payers are using, and all we hear from them is, well, we depend on our consultants to advise us on these health policies. Then we have discovered that actually consultants get also kickbacks from the payers.
Well, they bake it into their price somewhere.
Right. And I not to brag, but this is what I discovered 11 years ago, and I wrote in the book, Good Medicine, Cheaper Medicine. There is nobody who cares about the cost of healthcare except the payers. And they are not the payers, except the employers.
Right.
And they are the ones who say, well, we depend on consultants to guide us.
Well, you know, I would like to talk to the consultant for this one issue that we're having, a case where a cancer patient was on a specific medication, chemotherapy drug. Mm-hmm. And he, at first, when we tried to get the pre-certification late in December, it had to go to review. And it took us like a week or two to get
it
through.
Was that Herceptin?
Yes.
Yep.
It took a week or two to get that approved. We started the patient on the rest of the chemotherapy and delayed the Herceptin at that time. Had the approval all the way through May, 6-month approval.
Yeah.
So in the beginning of May, we logged in to get another recertification because he's still on the drug, right?
Yeah.
And it is just creating havoc. We still today, this is, 31 days since we asked for that. And we've been calling a couple of times a week. Our poor staffer, she's pulling all her hair out.
I had
to get on the phone because we tried, after being 4 weeks into it.
Remember Shelley Thursday?
I know.
When Samantha said to the lady on the other side who was a nurse, and she said to her, please authorize Herceptin, the patient has gastric cancer. And the nurse whoever that person was, she said, gastric, how does that spell? It gives me not goosebumps, sick to my stomach, that somebody is actually second-guessing me.
And they can't even spell the word gastric.
They can't spell the word gastric, which is the stomach. It blows my mind. And she didn't have accent. She was in mainland U.S., I assume.
Right.
Scary. But again, what they do, that is the nature of the beast. These payers, they themselves depend on somebody else. Tell us more about that, Shelley. The pre-authorization is not done by the insurance, right?
No.
It's paid for by the insurance.
But let me go back a second and finish up this story that just happened today with a gastric cancer patient.
Right.
So you had to take your time on the phone, and because they wouldn't take Sam's word for it that it had to be expedited. It's already been 4 weeks, 3.5 weeks, and we tried to expedite it. And they said, no, you have to get your ordering physician on the phone to expedite it. So you had to take your time, get on the phone. You went through that horrible conversation. I heard it. It was horrible. Today she called again, and guess what? The guy she finally got to on the phone, once you get like somebody live, right, she gave the reference number from that call, and it came up with the old reference number to the first authorization, number one.
Yeah.
And then he, after being on the phone for another 15 minutes, he dug out some record about her calling in on Thursday. No record of you talking to the lady at all. And you know what he said? This pre-authorization is unexpeditable. Is that even a word?
So my conversation with them was not recorded?
No, there was a call, but it was unexpeditable is what they said. So you just totally did not exist on Thursday.
I wish I was on the golf course, not the existing office, right? Yeah. And that's how they function. I mean, what can you do? Bottom line is, Shelley, back to the employers. Good medicine, cheaper medicine. That can only be done if the employers are absolutely in charge. We had a good interview recently with a CEO of one of the regional manufacturing companies who was involved in building an on-site clinic at their previous employer's office. And I think it was enlightening to know these employers are very busy with making a product, selling the product, right?
Right.
Financing the machines, handling employees. So they have to depend on consultants, especially when it comes to healthcare, because they simply don't know.
And what they don't know either is a lot of the times these pre-authorizations are being steered into directions that are more costly to the employer. So say, for example, we're calling in to get an authorization on medication underneath their medical benefits, right? And then all of a sudden, it automatically goes to the pharmacy department where it has to go through specialty pharmacy.
Yeah.
Which that's a 90-day script, and we've talked about that. It's way more expensive to go through specialty pharmacy, and it delays the treatment. So we try to get back over to the medical side.
So, Shelley, in simple English, for the public, they're saying the listeners are saying, okay, keep complaining, guys. Solution. How do we solve this problem? It is a problem because a few days ago, I was told by one of your staffers that the pre-auth for this CAT scan is minimum 30 days. That is blocking care. That is blocking access. Who can handle this? Who can solve this problem? I think ultimately, whoever writes the check every month.
But they're depending on the consultants giving them the right.
Can I say that's dumb and stupid? That they depend on consultants. I realize in the old days, healthcare was system. System was simple. Now it is complex. It's more expensive. It's taking a big chunk of their profit.
So the resolution is just partnering with the employers and giving them these case scenarios. This is what you chose. Yes. You realize that this is what's going
and
on.
And employers need to be very involved, maybe dedicate an office for that, like one or two employees, or deal with people who are trustworthy and who do not have a kickback from the decisions that they make.
Agree. I don't know if it can be done.
We are doing that. And with on-site clinics, I mean, that's a big step because when you minimize the involvement of the payers and the PBMs, the pharmacy benefit plans, when you minimize their role, you are minimizing the middleman's expense to the employer. And we're succeeding in that. We have now 11 or 12 customers. We have clinics at the factory. How many have we lost in the last 6 years?
None. So we're working on it. We're doing our part.
And honestly, the employees we're dealing with, they see it. And they're listening and they're acting.
Thank you.
It was a good half an hour again discussing one of those difficult topics to discuss. But we had to do it, right? Somebody else has to.